I mean, I don't know when you suggested it to me. I don't think you realized the studio that was backing this up.
I don't even know now.
they did a certain show that harkened back to memories of Pastel.
No way.
Oh, yeah. Same
studio. This is a big step up from
that.
This
is their highest rated shit they've ever done.
No shit.
Seriously. But we'll talk about it. All right. I think you start.
Welcome back to Cross. Hey, what I'm Ethan.
Hey, I am your...
I was a dwarf for a second.
I'm your Roman Emperor aesthetic looking Professor Ricky.
You've got a laurel laden upon your head.
Yes, I have I have my own robe of Spidey Man kind of garb.
And a toga of sorts.
I'm getting comfy for this one.
Yeah.
Because it's been a week in the lab. I have found comfort here now. I have made peace with the demons in the basement.
Good.
Which is great. Yeah, I feel like I have to. A little downtrodden, though, this week. Because our team, a reason why I'm wearing this garb is I'm also wearing a shirt of our favorite sports team that kind of got absolute clapped and slapped this week. And not too happy about it.
Steelers suck and have for years.
Yeah, no, well, I mean, they have, but like Trubisky's not going to do the work. We need
a real quarterback.
We need Big Dick Pickett, our number two. We need him. Mason Rudolph's not going to be the quarterback we need. He never was.
That kid's just shell-shocked, honestly, he looks like a deer in the headlights when he's out there.
Honestly, and Pickett's literally our only hope for this year.
Kenny.
It's all we need.
I heard he's got small hands.
Small hands make for quick releases. That's all I need.
I need
that quick release. You know, it makes me think, you know, I just want to go back to the good old days of like Roethlisberger prime, the Brown era, like the actual pre-drama Brown era.
Right. Agreed. I need
that. Yeah.
And then again, I think they threw away so many like best teams in the country type like years
for the, yeah,
that it's like, how can you even like, I don't even feel bad anymore. It's just like, we fucking blow.
Yeah. I mean,
there's nothing you can do.
We're in the reconstruction phase of our era now. And that's going to be basically our 30s, I think, until we get a decent quarterback. It just makes me yearn for the good old days.
I beat you to it, bitch.
You got it. You got me there. Today we're talking about a show that is from a couple seasons ago that I think maybe went under the radar for a lot of people, and maybe for good reason after watching it.
What the fuck?
But it was, like I had told you off mic, I think there is a lot to pull out here that does make this show stand like just a neck and shoulders above the rest in its camp, but it is painted in a paint job of our nostalgia. I think a lot of people had grown up with what they're trying to emulate here, and I would love to talk about why I think that works in a lot of respects for the show's story, the characters, and all that. So, Ethan, you know what's going to happen. What are we talking about today?
Today, we are talking about a show that it was highly recommended by our dear friend Danny.
Ah, yes, it was. Yeah, I forgot about that.
In our Weebology Discord. You know, you're going to hear about that at the end of the show here. But
obviously.
Anyway, so she was talking about it as like a kind of under the radar romance of that specific season. And I happened to have been watching it the whole time and agreed wholeheartedly. So I decided to suggest this to you in an effort to continue to open up your horizons to more of the, like, I don't know, sitcom, rom-com kind of, you know, in deep cut romance stuff that's like not like
deep cut,
etchy,
yes.
Stupid.
Deep cut, yes. Etchy, stupid. Yeah, you know, there's a bit of that there, but I mean, that's all I'm saying. I have some notes on the ideas.
Oh, I can't wait to hear about your notes. But anyway, I just wanted to kind of like bring this up as a decent little 12 episode show that I enjoyed from that season. It was probably like my third or fourth favorite show from that season. Basically, I just, you know, I think it was the same season as Spy Family.
I think it was. Like, I genuinely think it was.
Yeah, so it was like in that kind of realm there, like, you know, maybe two or three shows below that. And then,
yeah, I mean,
you know, it's kind of a different, I think, romance too. Like, the ones that we've at least talked about on this show were like Maid Sama. I don't think that's really close at all to this.
No, it isn't. And it has to be known that it's not. But I mean, what are we?
I don't know.
What are we talking about today, though?
Oh, yeah. Huh. Dang, I guess I didn't mention that. Anyway, so the other shows I think it's like is
Love After World Domination, a spring 2022 anime that was made by a little particular studio called Project Number 9. They've had other notable shows that got the attention of the anime community, like HX Eros, and it was But that also was the studio that gave us the lovely Worst of Weed favorite, Pastel Memories.
The fugue state that you have to go into to watch
Cheesy
that show.
Cheesy Pete. And the Love After World Domination is their highest rated show on Live Chart.
As it should be.
Like, literally by nearly an entire point. Like, we're talking like 7.4 and the next highest is like 6.5.
That seems reasonable.
That's what I'm saying, right? Is that it's there. But I think first impressions of this show is... It's comfortable. That's another reason why I'm in blanket garb right now. It is to embody the show's overall kind of vibe. And there is a comfortability in this show and the romance and the characters. It's very kind of cushy and it's not a thinker. But I think as we go through it, I'm about to just apply probably more wrinkle power WPs than I think this show probably deserves, and I'm going to be correlating things that I don't think they probably meant to do, but it's an end result of what this show is. Seriously, genuinely, like I'm taking stuff away that, like, I know for a fact some of this they did not intend, but I'm going to correlate these things anyway, because, like, if I were to break it down, I think that's where it would inevitably lead to. But first impressions, how did you feel? You watched a little earlier than I did. As you watched it, were you satisfied leaving it? Were you okay? Or is it just your typical blasé romance bullshit?
I think they did something a little bit fun with it where they like kind of, it's definitely leans heavy on the com, not just the rom. And yes. Like the romance is so like, so wholesome and like there's barely any like hand holding even, right? Like there's no, in my opinion, there was no like concern that it's just going to devolve into like some disgusting animator's sex fantasy.
Right. It definitely kept it on the level.
Like, right. It was just like a will they, won't they? But yes, of course they're going to. But, you know, a Romeo and Juliet of themselves.
Mm-hmm. That's,
you
that's
know, kind of wrapped in like a really fun, I think, skin container.
Yeah. And it's not a will they, won't they, is it's a they will, but can they?
Yeah, kind
of. It is a application at its nugget, at its core, of a forbidden love story, a romance, a relationship that cannot or should not occur. And I was talking to Ethan off mic as I was watching it today, and I was telling him, like, this, I think the way that they applied the forbidden love trope outplayed literally hundreds of years in both live theater all the way up to modern media. It's a trope for Western storytelling through and through. I mean, it literally exists. And I say Western specifically because I think they take a Western flavor of this as opposed to a Japanese forbidden love aspect. And I have a particular reason why. But overall, I think the forbidden love thing was good. I think it felt natural in the setting. It was something that, you know, you could understand why it was forbidden. And it didn't feel like, sometimes when forbidden love is applied, there is a good and a bad version of it. A bad version would imply that the relationship in and of itself is toxic, and the toxicity of a relationship is the forbidden part. Like, they shouldn't be together because they're bad for each other. There's an element of stories later.
I'd say like that. That's like actually pretty typical in Japanese anime, you know, right, manga, where it's like, I shouldn't be in love with my teacher, but I am.
Right.
Where it's like, yeah, that's not good for you, boss.
Yeah, it's just not. And I think an element of the will they, won't they, sorry, the they will, but can they forbidden love element of this is that, in a lot of anime, in romance anime specifically, and a lot of like Eastern storytelling, The will they, won't they comes from a societal pressure. Like, you can probably get away with this, but you shouldn't. We've had a lot of, like, what was that show? Like, my stepsister is my ex-girlfriend and also my new, like my mom, like my new stepmom is like the mom of like my, my ex-lover or what, that kind of shit, right? Is that, well, seriously.
Utterly butchered titles, but I know what you're talking about.
That energy, yeah. Right? Yeah, that kind of stuff. And it's like, no, seriously, like, it's...
My step-grandpa is my aunt's dog's best friend.
And I'm in love with that best friend? Weird.
And I'm in love with my smartphone?
Exactly. Like, it's not that it couldn't happen.
Well,
it's societally said you shouldn't.
What was that movie, Her?
Her, essentially. Oh, with Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah, whack him.
Yep. And so, I mean, it's that kind of stuff, right? Is that a lot of Japanese forbidden love romances are based on a societal pressure. You're from a, you know, a lower class standing. I am an elite, top of the class kind of vibe, but we just gel together, but the school never accept it. We have to keep it secret. It's very much the individuals in the romance succumbing to the pressures that they could easily break out of. School, family, whatever. There's a difference, though, in Western forbidden love, I think. With Romeo and Juliet, you had warring families. Like, literally, like, they are my enemy. And I think that is a forbidden romance trope that I think works, because you have roadblocks here that are outside of your control, and even if you were to fight against them, it might be a lost cause. In this show, they do the same thing, but they do it from a different angle. And I love, and we talked about how it has a different paint job of nostalgia. The entire show is set in a world that exists with basically a Power Rangers Sentai-esque squad fighting against an organization called Gecko, a secret society bent on world domination. And this squad is called the Giletto 5. Man, a couple things there. One, the way that they portray that Power Ranger kind of vibe is so on point. I could literally see this being a live action Sentai Power Ranger export from Japan.
Yeah, I think I could too.
Genuinely.
I don't know if you recall when I started watching this, we were doing like a recap episode or something about all the stuff we were watching, and I had mentioned like Giletto 5.
I remember you mentioning that.
Just clowning on it.
Yeah.
And then I actually ended up not hating it, because they're like, I think what they do really good about it is, like, you know, when you watch Power Rangers or whatever, I guess you get like a little bit of their life.
Yeah.
But this is like more about the life outside of the, you know, the battling with your Megazord.
That's part of it, right? Is that all these Power Rangers, I mean, like, I want to talk about Power Rangers for a second, because it's something that I grew up with. I think a lot of people our age grew up with Power Rangers, right?
For
Mighty
sure.
Morphin, banging. Turbo, awesome. Space.
Dino?
Dino, duh. Like, and even, there's even a train Power Rangers. A train version that was never serialized in the US because we don't give a fuck about trains. But Japan sure does, and Japan fell in love with that flavor.
Shinkansen Red.
Yeah, basically. Like, that is so this, the Giletto 5, they're all flavors of Giletto. The leader, Red Giletto, also known as Fudo Aikawa, he basically is strawberry Giletto, and he has this squad like pink, yellow, blue, and green, I think. And green is pistachio, and frankly, my favorite dude. But he, like is leading a team of Power Rangers that I could see existing. Like, genuinely. Like, and it wasn't because it was just, like, the Power Rangers are outlandish. Like, visually, storytelling-wise, it's episodic, it's Monster of the Week, right? You get this weird, almost, like, flimsy physical effect monster, right?
Right.
That shows up. They have a call to action. They transform. The monster grows big. They combine their Megazords, and then they defeat the monster to win the day. Rinse and repeat, with the occasional two or three parter happening.
Bearsama got bodied.
Yeah, Bearsama got absolutely clappadude. And the funny thing is, the show does it so well, you can believe the Giletto 5 to be a flavor of Power Rangers. Pun 100% intended. So, like, I love the way that they nostalgized this story, and that's a total word that I just made up. Nostalgized. They repackaged that which we grew up with as the setting for a forbidden romance, because the leader of the Gelato Five, Fudo, had fallen in love at first sight with one of the greatest soldiers of the Gecko villain organization, Desumi Magahara. And Magahara.
Magahara.
And she's like their best soldier they've ever had. And she's known as the Reaper Princess. It's a great repackaging of all of that, and a great setting for a comedic forbidden love, forbidden romance, because like I was telling you off mic, the outlandishness of the setting of a Power Rangers Sentai like type setting just makes the forbidden love of a villain and a hero that much more, I don't know, outlandish in its own right. And it adds to the comedy because it lends itself to very bombastic comedic situations. It's not just a rom-com, it's a rom-sitcom, and it's great. Like, I think the setting and the way they repackage the forbidden love stuff here is new, exciting, fresh. I'm in for it.
I agree.
Yes. that's how I be. Because I mean, that the whole show is just kind of like this this running gag of they will communicate with each other to let each other know where the villains are going to show up, where the heroes are going to show up, so they just get to meet and have more dates.
Right, which is hilarious. They have dates while all their friends and, like, compatriots are just battling to the, like, you know, knockout because they don't kill each other for some reason.
Literally, they're chilling on a cliff and just explosions happening down below within just minions and the Gelato 4, because the other one is up there canoodling with the enemy.
Yeah,
And then
if anyone ever, like, shows up, they, like, start attacking each other
instantly.
Yeah, and everyone's like, "Oh my god, what an insane battle!
This is so crazy. He's winning." but like a second before, it was like, "The cookies you made were so fucking bomb, babe." Like, "Oh my god, babe. These cookies, babe!" Like, fuck. And so, I mean, that's kind of where the show hangs its hat. And
yeah,
that's one of maybe. I want to come into this with my opinion as I kind of give my gripes, japes, and, you know,
cheers,
sure. Because I think I went in with a slightly negative perspective initially, because it is not my cup of tea. But I wouldn't say that my expectations were subverted. My expectations were calmed. The show was like, "All right, buddy, you're in the right direction, but don't fucking get, like, don't get too ornery about this."
Yeah.
Like, yeah, don't get crazy. Like, this isn't that bad, but, like, you're kind of in the right camp. So I'm like, totally, all right. Well, it's not like, it's not as bad as I walked in thinking, but it wasn't like a dumpster fire, which is kind of a bit of the energy I went in with. Which is,
wasn't as bad as you were thinking, but it wasn't a dumpster fire.
Yeah.
So, like, why do you think it was so bad, I guess, originally?
I think originally because it felt, you know, I never considered that someone using the Power Rangers Sentai trope, like, it inherently implies cheese. Like, it's cheesy as fuck, right?
Sure.
So I thought that it was going to align itself with a really cheesy format, and then the romance in and of itself was just going to fall in line with that, and the whole thing was going to be cheese. But they actually did a pretty admirable job at using that setting to subvert certain comedic and romantic plot beats, which is pretty cool. And on top of that, make a very natural setting for setups for comedic situations to happen time and time again. Again, 12 episodes is perfect for this. I cannot expect, I would, you know, if a season 2 comes around, they better up the ante, is all I'm saying. 12 was perfect. If they left it here, I would be satisfied, you know.
Yeah, I guess, like, just thinking ahead, I don't even know what you would do for a season 2. Like, I think it would be like the world finds out and then maybe there's some repercussions. Like, I would almost want the show to take on, like, a borderline serious approach if they did, like, do a season 2, just to be like, everything we did, we know that everyone was like okay with it, but you know, fuck it, let's take it to the nines and see what happens. Like, make it like a actually like almost a dramatic story, like another I would say semi dramatic like romance that I've seen would be Horimiya. While it's like, it's very, I mean, there's no like superheroes or anything. It's like just very much like a high school romance.
Sure.
It gets like dramatic near the end, and then it like really ratchets up the, I guess, the stakes, because they're like, fuck it, let's just like be together forever. It's sort of like, did you ever watch Toradora?
Yes. Yeah.
So you've seen Toradora. Yes. You're definitely.
Like, I get it. Like yeah. That, and that's, but Toradora just does it. You know, there's.
I personally was not a fan of them getting together at all, but
yeah, I have notes on it, but I think they still have quite a refined romantic game going on there. But the thing about Love After World Domination is that by hanging your hat on the Power Ranger formula, you are basically eliminating any sense of long-term stakes in terms of the drama of the setting.
I know. I'm just saying, like, imagine if they came to the back to the like drawing board in the writer's room and they're like, all right, guys, I know we were fucking around for season one, but for whatever reason, they greenlit us for a second season. Let's pop this bitch off.
That would, okay. I think if that were to happen, that would be a good direction for season two. However, I have problems because I don't think they have set themselves up in any respect to be able to do that naturally in any way. And I got, and let me count the ways. One is the fact that I'm going to start surface level and go deeper, because surface level, we don't really know why Gekka wants to control the world. I'd argue that we don't really know how. They're just growing monsters from negative human emotions that they collect.
Boss Lacoon.
Boss Lacoon is basically the head of this Gekka organization. He never explains, even in a throwaway line, why the fuck he's doing this. But that's fine in a Power Ranger Sentai type format. They don't have to explain why. No one gives a fuck in Power Rangers why, Ivan Ooze is
Rita, whatever her name was.
Yeah, trying to take over the world and defeat the Power Ranger. No one gives a fuck, because that's not what the show's about. It's about episodic, predictable action. Like, you know, they're going to go in, the monster shows up, they fight, they transform, monster grows big, they grow big, defeat the day, defeat the monster, we're good. Where everything's great. You don't have to know why, but this show is not inherently episodic about the Power Ranger aspect, right? So they've set themselves up in a way that, by never explaining why Gekko is trying to take over the world, they can never raise the stakes. Unless they do.
Here's what I think would be fun, and like, I'll get back to the actual plot-ish sometime soon, but
sure.
Imagine if you then take like what we have now, and then for season two, you kind of play the combatants will be dispatched angle, where it's like, well, we took over the world, and then it's sort of like, how do you still find a way to be together? Like, because he has to be the bastion of humanity or whatever. It's kind of funny because they kind of take it like almost a boys route, where it's like the superheroes are really like highly advertised and like very,
oh, they're commoditized, yeah, for sure.
They're,
yeah,
very much like
they're a product. He's
a
in
product.
Fudo, the leader, he's in commercials out the butt. I mean, he literally has his own energy drink.
Right.
Incredible. Like, so, if only we can all land such a deal.
Right. So it's very much like that. I don't know. I love stories that just go fucking off the wall. Like, even like books.
Actually,
like, I have this problem where I semi love it and hate it, because like sometimes it's really, I find it frustrating when it seems like the character just gets fucked over nonstop, like your main character.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like a Subaru thing. Like, that to me is like so annoying sometimes, because I'm just like, they got to catch one fucking break, man.
Yeah, right. That's a good way to put it. They got to get something.
Right.
An attaboy in the midst of drudging through the I don't know, dire consequences of all their actions, even if they want to mean well.
Or like, you know, their girlfriend's cheating on them, all their friends die,
just
like
get beaten down by their situation, right.
It's
left
just like
and
so
right.
Stupid.
Yeah.
But back to the story quick. Yes. One thing I did like is they kind of went away from like the stealing moments to be together, and then like they slowly tried to work toward like a real relationship outside of it all. As Fudo and Megumi, or whatever her name was.
Desmi. Yeah.
Instead of, like, Reaper Princess in Red Gelato. And, like, those are the moments that I felt like it started becoming, like, an actually decent show that I was, like, willing to see what would happen next. Where, like, there's this one scene later on. It doesn't really matter. She invites him to, like, come over to her actual house.
Yeah.
But turns out she lives in a dorm full of Gekko.
Yeah, right. So that's another element of another gripe I wanted to bring up. This Desmi character, while cute as a button, like she's very cute and like, you know, she puts on this obvious like evil facade, but it's very thinly veiled if you get to know her even just a little bit. But she's never let anybody close. So Fudo being one of the first people ever to get that close to her, she's a girl's girl. She is a cat who actually has a series of like cat diaries post credit scenes throughout the show.
Yeah, yeah.
Of her basically saying, "Dear diary, my owner is quite happy today. I think I'd like to see her happy tomorrow as well. I believe it is the man that she is seeing that makes her this happy." Like it's literally like this sterile like. It's like my owner is just like being very like chipper lately and I kind of dig it. But like all in all, the one gripe I have with her character is I never get a good reason as to why she wants to be part of this Gekko organization outside of maybe familial doctrination.
I think that's 100%.
That's all it is.
I don't think she cares about world domination.
She doesn't give a shit. Like she just like
otherwise
she'd be
winning.
She wants to be part of something.
I genuinely think it's like mommy and daddy told her to go be a Gekko, and that's what she's doing.
Daddy specifically,
because remember, there's actually like a whole plot point about her wanting to go to college or whatever, and he's like, "Why? You can go become a monster class."
Yeah, and so this high knight of the evil organization Desmi, her dad was an ex grunt. Of this organization.
It's like generic Team Rocket number 5.
And I found the comedy of his situation was actually quite well done. The fact that he has honed his skills over years and decades of service to the Gekko organization of failing with flair.
Yes.
Like a stormtrooper getting shot and then doing 2 backflips.
Ah!
Yeah, like he makes it, he sells it. Because he knows he's getting defeated.
Right.
He's done it for like 3 decades. Of course he knows, right? He's playing his part, but he's playing it with pizzazz.
Right.
Gustav. Like he's playing with panache. And I love it. Like
I mean, you got to respect the man that just goes all in for his work.
Dedicates himself to the craft, baby. He knows how to make a good-looking film. Good-looking story. So, she's been indoctrinated because his loyalty to that organization. But the entire time, we get, like, weird flashbacks of her actually saving a lot of pivotal side characters in the story. So, in all accounts, she may have as many heroic acts as we see on screen for Fudo, aka Red Gelato, like in flashbacks, right? She saves Pink. She saves a couple other people. Like she saves her little sister. Like she, by all accounts, is bruiser for sure, but a hero in a lot of cases. So.
I think it's trying to play on the fact that like she could easily just join Gelato.
Yeah, and she was offered the position at one point.
Right.
Yeah.
But like I think her family would stop talking to her if she just became a Gelato all of a sudden.
Yeah, I think they did do it at least a decent job of giving her pretense for why she just is sticking with Gekko. Like that's enough of that is there where I'm like, all right, I can at least
believe
it.
I think
it.
This is definitely one of those shows where you just don't think about it that
and
hard.
Perfect
my
segue
man.
into Jape number 3. The level of suspension of belief that you have to kind of apply here for in favor of centering the romance in the middle is quite high.
But I think that's the point of using the Power Rangers trope.
I think that that was the one counterpoint I thought.
It's like you instantly are like, well, I'm gonna have to pretend that I give a fuck about all the flair. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. Sparks just happen to like go off behind me as a flare, but that's just. Is a thing like that. That is something that everyone that watched.
We've come out with our new weapon, and it just so happens to literally malfunction instantly.
Exactly. There's there are some moments where the suspension of disbelief actually intrudes on the comedy, which I was not a big fan of. Like the happenstance of like random occurrences happening in the favor of comedy that kind of detract. Like they didn't necessarily need to do some of that stuff. Like the Culverin Bear. Like having the new weaponry and it just going off at a poor time.
Yeah.
Like funny, but they didn't have to do that for the comedy. I don't know. It's just, but to your point, that's kind of just an element of the Sentai formula.
I think it's just like bumbling bad guy number five.
Exactly. So it does bring up one of the main questions I wanted to ask you. Do you feel as though the Sentai setting for this show, while I think augments the romantic forbidden aspect of it, do you feel like it's scaffolded too much? Like, it literally, that format allows for set pieces to be given to you, character designs and philosophies just given to you, the narrative and just given to you. So do you feel that it's too many training wheels by using that? Or do you think it actually was used in a way that was subversive and new?
I think it's a good enough vehicle for like the wholesome little romance show that they're trying to come out with, right?
Sure.
Like I don't think this treads new water in terms of Sentai or in terms of
never meant to.
Romance or in terms of forbidden love. It's just sort of like a fair vehicle to deliver your like, I don't know. I personally every week was like, all right, I'll watch the next one. Like there was never a situation where I thought, you know, it became unwatchable because of pace or like my interest in it.
The pacing actually was quite good.
And like, I guess what I was always waiting for is like, okay, is Destiny going to make this decision to dip on her squad or not? And it never ended up being really much of an issue.
One of the, and you're just teeing my japes up so well. Like number four is, I feel as though that this forbidden romance, you know, is something I told you off mic that I think the core question that this poses is, you know, when you have a forbidden romance, what are the roadblocks? What is the context for making it forbidden, right? There are ways to make it good. You know, Romeo and Juliet is literally something we all have to read because in Western media, it's like it's a classic. But there's piss poor ones like The Shape of Water, Fish Guy in a Tank. Girl falls in love with fish guy and they, you know,
calamity ensues.
Yeah, calamity ensues.
A little
right?
abomination occurs.
Yeah, like literally interspecies mixing.
And winning a freaking Grammy.
Yeah, right there.
Or an Oscar.
Right there.
All you gotta do is fuck fishman.
Yeah, fucking fishman is forbidden love for sure. But I think that's a really poor application of this concept. Here, though, forbidden implies it is forbidden equally for both. However, it felt lopsided here. For Fudo, he had an entire squad of individuals that were literally like at his beck and call, looking to him to stay the course, be steady. Hell, even people that interacted with him while he was hiding it was like, nah, he doesn't have a girlfriend. He's our rock. He's steady. He's steady as it goes. He's the same Fudo as he always been, right? Calculating, literally single-minded in his pursuit of justice. Like, he is our leader, right?
Right.
He had so much to lose from a social, personal, and philosophical aspect. I never felt she was ever at odds with the stakes. Anyone who found out, the pink gelato ranger, she, like, literally cried in her arms as she found out.
Right.
Right? Anyone else who found out, even the Gelato 5 who found out, all of them, all at once, were all kind of cool with it, even offered her a position.
Right.
She never had any adversity in this forbidden love. So it felt weirdly lopsided that she felt like, oh no, this is not going to work for me. And she even had instances within loving, not in fighting, but in loving within her company with the bear guy and Steel Princess.
Right.
So she had already a avenue where, like, wait, maybe this work, like, or this romance during work can be a thing because she just saw an example of it. She never had the adversity that would require the minimum requirements for forbidden for her, I think. Outside of maybe her dad. But her dad, if she were to just say, like, oh, yeah, I'm dating that Mudo guy because he disguised himself as a grunt at some point.
Right.
If she were to just say, like, oh, yeah, he's a grunt. And he's like, oh, it's Mudo, my boy. Like, he like, commiserated with him. She had no roadblocks. He had every roadblock. It felt weird, like, lopsided
yeah,
to me.
Yeah, I think maybe, like, she's probably overthinking it.
Oh,
right?
100% like, she's overthinking it.
And also not thinking about all the stuff that he has to lose, yet he's so down. You know what I mean? So, like, I do think, like, I of course agree with you. I don't know how much it particularly matters to the overall show. I think the forbidden thing goes down to, like, my family is a gecko, you know, for generations.
And my family's a gelato for at least one generation.
And I'm a princess product.
And I'm the leader prince of a group, like, right. Kind of thing. Like, yeah. So, I mean, like, this is one of those things, suspension of disbelief and a really open attitude, like, is what you need to come to this show with. Enough of my japes. I do want to give it some of the goods.
I don't know. I just feel like you watch this show for the, like, cute little romance and you let the scaffolding, let's just say, play out around it.
Yeah.
And you just don't, I mean, I never care about really Power Rangers when I watched it, right? It was just like, fight the bad guy.
Yep, that's all my 10-year-old mind
wanted to
see.
Hit him with the Megazord.
Yep, get that Megazord built. Let's go. Yeah. Fight that Godzilla surrogate. So enough of the cons. There are a lot of pros here. I truly think that. And one of the big ones is the romance itself. I think it was really, really endearing how in the midst of them both understanding that they have a role to play and people who rely on them to play that role. Gecko relies on Reaper Princess, as they do with all the princess set, which is like their basically harem of princess warriors that they just plucked from the same high school, apparently, because they all go to the fucking same school, by the way.
Yeah.
So, but, and then the gelato group by Big Gelato, the professor, who's essentially the alpha of that, Zorgon of that group.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Zorgon of that group. Rangers, we have another issue. Go get teleported there and transform. He was like just this Dr. Wily looking motherfucker. And basically that, you know, they both really were committed to the roles that they were allotted to. By whatever means they got to that role, we don't really know. But they were both very hard on themselves and critical if they were to deviate from those paths all throughout the show. And they taught themselves to be, at least when they're around each other, to take themselves easy. You know, like, to really, you know, forgive themselves for not, you know, for trying to enact their own desires and self-interests in the face of their duties. And they supported each other, not just in that goal, but they supported each other in their prescribed roles. Like like you said earlier, whenever someone would look, they immediately snap into action and make it look like they're fighting.
Right.
Because they do not only care about the well-being of each other, they do care and understand each other because they're in those roles, respectively. So they want to play the appearance, not just for keeping it secret, but to make sure the other is, you know, good to go with their group. And I think that was really endearing because it shows an element of care, not just like, you know, I want you to go for your goals, but I understand you have a duty. Trust me, I do too.
Right.
I found that very kind of nuanced in a couple instances, very nuanced, really.
I guess I never really thought about it even close to as deep as that.
Like I told at the beginning of this episode, I'm going to give it a lot more wrinkle power than I think it deserves, but that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, I mean, like, while that, of course, was there, I never really was like, wow, she's being so, like, adult about this.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing that I would just, like, think about is, like, these two are absolutely superhuman, and everybody else is just a complete dweeb wake.
They're a class of their own. Right? Like literally.
I'm just thinking to myself, like, how is Reaper Princess not just, like, murked the other four?
We did get a glimpse of that when the pink tried to fight her.
Yeah.
And literally, she was just clowning on her.
Yeah, clapping her cheeks.
Yeah, just like backhanding for funsies level. Like she wasn't even trying. And then the one time she did try, she put her on her ass.
Like Beerus versus Goku style.
Easy, easy clap. Super Saiyan 3 on King Kai's planet, Beerus versus Goku.
Yeah, where he gets blasted through the little planet.
Just a little tap on the neck and he just falls through the planet. Yep, done.
God, that is such a clutch scene.
It's animated like shit, but it's a clutch
scene.
Hey. What do you mean, hey?
Hey,
it's famously shit.
It's just cool, though.
It's a cool concept.
Tell me that ain't cool.
Do it justice, baby. Come on.
I mean, you're blasting a guy through our Earth. Who gives a shit? Like, what do you need to do?
Animate it better is what you need to do.
What's better? You're going straight line down into the thing. Boom.
Those are some bad stills. We're not getting into the conversation.
What's the change, man?
Oh, God. That'll be another conversation for another day. If you want to do an animation episode, I will come prepped notes.
I'm sure you will.
Entire books written. On
wow.
my accord.
Okay, do that. Let's start with that and write some books.
Yeah. Oh, no. They're written. They're upstairs. They're in the lab.
You wrote books.
Trilogy, even.
You've written a trilogy
on Sakugo, my guy.
Wow.
Volume 2. All the shit examples.
Can I get your autograph?
For the right price.
Do you have a hard copy?
Yeah, the only hard copy.
Can we put it on the shelf?
They are on the shelf somewhere, but I won't tell you which one.
Oh my God.
But all in all, I do hear what you're saying. It's like she and him, Red Gelato and Reaper Princess, are, I think that was kind of the precipice that they both hit where like, Red Gelato was clowning on everybody else. Reaper Princess was the up and coming, literally untouchable. And the fact that they were an even match for each other was kind of why Red Gelato Fudo was just like, yep, I love this chick.
She's also hot. So
she's also hot as fuck.
I think I'm just going to like spoil a little bit, I guess. We're 41 minutes in. I don't plan on going super long here for this episode.
I don't think so either.
I really don't know what else really to talk about other than like I thought it was really enjoyable, wholesome show.
I got a couple other notes.
There's this kind of, I think, growth that Fudo tries to go through where he's like, instead of being like a battle junkie and gym junkie, he's trying to think of like date ideas. I really loved those like couple of episodes where he's like, he's even like outsourcing to Pink Gelato and the green, the other yellow.
Yellow. Yeah. Yellow.
Who's like kind of teasing him. I thought she had a thing for him, but never ended up like becoming a thing.
I think Pink had a thing for him. Yellow. Never
oh, for
did.
Sure.
Yeah, for sure. For
well,
sure.
She acted like it. The first time she comes into the frame, Yellow acts like she's got a thing for him.
Absolutely.
Anyway, the point is, he like outsources all these ideas and then he ends up just taking Desmi on like the most physically intensive date of all time and he thinks he's like blowing it.
He tries to fucking run away.
Yeah.
Literally, he leaves. He brings a bag of protein bars to have as quote unquote dinner after a date of 2 hours and change of intensive workouts. And to him, because he comes to the conclusion after reading up on all these dates, like we said earlier in this episode, he's cold. He's not cold, but he's calculating. He's logical. He's very sterile as a dude. He's simple minded. So he's like, yes, it's something that me and her would enjoy together. Training. Of course. Why not? That's the thing we should do together. And weirdly enough, despite him running away because the Yellow Ranger had called him up and said, like, these are the things you should do, and literally lists everything he did as wrong.
Yeah.
Like shot for
do
shot.
The opposite of all of these things.
And he's literally just nearly weeping, like, fuck, this date's going south, dude. I gotta get the fuck out of here, dude. And he just runs. And then Desmi comes out and is totally chill with the whole idea. Completely chill with it.
Yeah.
Love that. I genuinely, because like she's like, yeah, I'm here for you. No big deal.
And like, it was just moments like that that I thought were like the shining little like glimpses into like a, wow, that's a fairly decent relationship for a battle maniac and a Reaper Princess.
Basically, yeah. So, I mean, like, some of the other highlights of the show, the Sakugo is here in snippets. I mean, you maybe have like 5 minutes of total Sakugo throughout the entire 12 episodes. And I mean, the choreography for the battles were pretty tight, and some of the like powers and mech situations were there are moments where you're gonna be like, ooh, this is pretty to look at. Like, it wasn't the best you're ever gonna see, but like, we're not here for that, right?
Right.
But the fact they gave a little care to it, I'm cool with that. I appreciate it. If you're into battle stuff and you're like, oh, okay, I'll try this. Like, I'll try a romance anime. This may not be what you're looking for. Like, this has some battle elements in it, some shonen-esque kind of things in it, but it is definitely not enough to offset. Like, you're here for the romance.
Yeah,
and the comedy.
I don't think this is either a Sentai or a shonen at all.
Like I said, it's got a Sentai paint job, but that's really that's just a vehicle for the
it's
comedy.
It's got a Sentai racist stripe.
Yes, all five colors of the rainbow, because that's all there is in every Power Ranger situation.
Yeah, true.
And then one rogue one, like the Green Ranger and the Mighty Morphins, that are just kind of a rando.
Black and White Rangers.
Yeah, the White Ranger was the leader of that one, because that was Tommy. That was Tommy, my dude. Another gripe I had, a tiny one, that why was Decimi basically like, you know, you didn't have to put her in skimp here. You didn't have to put her in ecchi shit. Like I get it. Like, we saw, like, she reminded me of a classic Mighty Morphin female villain that was in, like, this, like, bra and, like, kind of like a, you know, almost like a swimsuit bottom of sort and like a cape. Like, she literally looked like that kind of thing. So I guess they're hearkening very closely back to that. You didn't have to do it. So it was nice to, like, they jumped her into normal clothes. And honestly, like, she looked cute as a button in, like, the normal clothes.
Right.
I'd prefer that. She looked normal. She was, like, having a good time with him. Like, you know, these kind of project number nine.
I think potentially it's for the contrast of, like, how normal she is versus, like, how aggressively sexual and whatever she would be as Reaper Princess.
Yeah, I guess,
like,
that,
like,
I guess
sort
that's
of the
fair
juxtaposition of, like, wearing comfy pants and a shirt, you know, at home versus, which, like,
and
she has all pink everywhere else.
Yeah.
Then her entire Reaper Princess is just, like, skull mask, all black, like fishnets.
Funny you brought the skull mask, because that also added to one of the gripes earlier about how she had really nothing to lose and he had everything to lose, where her costume, because these fights were televised,
right,
broadcasted on the news. She had a hood, which had bunny ears for God knows why, but she had, like, a skull mask on that hood. No one ostensibly would have really recognized her in public, but our boy Fudo was in commercials, helmet off.
Right.
Like, everyone knew his face. Fuck, I mean, every the Rangers that went out were getting, like social media love and, like, absolute clout. Like,
right.
Everyone,
every time they walked
were
around, they'd be like, oh my God, that's Homelander. I mean, sorry, Red Gelato.
Hayato, like, hey. Hayato or whatever his name was. The blue one, who was kind of like the ladies' man shithead,
I think,
archetype.
Hayato, maybe?
Hayato. He, like, again, he was highly recognized. All the ladies loved him. And, like, any of the other ones were just like, oh, it's the Ranger. Can I get a picture? So if he were to be found out dating this chick, everyone would have been like, ooh, Fudo has a girlfriend. But no one would have known it was Decimi, which also kind of full circles back. Is it really forbidden if no one even knows it was her? Like,
well, what if they start dating and then, like, blows up her spot entirely? Like, they see them together outside, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, all the Bossler Coon little drones know who she is. And then, of course, they're going to, like, shine a light on her life. And they're going to be like, she lives in a gecko fucking dormitory.
She literally is in the gecko frat house. Like, yeah, seriously. Like, Gamma, Gecko, Edo, or whatever the fuck. Like, she literally would be found out, I guess, from that point of view. But why would they air that laundry? Why would Gecko want to air that laundry? They probably want to bury that shit heavy so they can keep their one of their best warriors. I mean, routinely, she was a top performer.
I don't think they would intentionally air the laundry. Like, they wouldn't dox their own employee.
Right, right.
What I'm saying is, since Fudo is so famous, if somebody sees him and some cute little blonde girl hanging out all the time, they're going to be like, wow, he's got a girlfriend.
Let's look into this.
Yeah. All over Instagram, and then everyone's going to be talking about Decimi.
They're going to dog whistle 4chan, and they're going to absolutely dox his ass and then find out everything about her.
They're
going to
find where that Shia LaBeouf hid that...
Absolute the beef,
he
everybody.
He will not deny it to the divide us sign.
On that one alleyway?
Yeah, the alleyway. Camera. And then in Finland, in the house in Finland, in the field in fucking Oklahoma.
And there was that flagpole incident was part of that too.
That's what I'm talking about.
There it is, yeah. Cheesy Pete. Yeah, you're right. They were dox his ass.
That's my favorite internet historian of all time.
It's really funny.
Yeah.
It's really funny. But yeah, all in all, the romance was good. I think the setting allowed for...
I want to ask you a question.
Yes.
Of all of the romance you've seen, is this the worst one you've seen?
No, no. Absolutely not.
What's the worst one?
Scum's Wish.
That's what I was thinking.
Easy, dude. Like, literally, Scum's Wish.
That's real forbidden
love. Is literally
love.
A group of scummy people having awful...
Scum fuck.
Toxic as fuck relationships.
Skullduggerous assholes.
It's awful. But this, the romance was, it was cute. Both of them really cared about each other. The Sentai paint job of the setting really added to, like I had mentioned up top, the outlandishness of the Power Rangers formula allowed for them to have very comedic situational, you know, mishaps and shenanigans.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Oh, my God. My fellow cohort found us and we're just going to punch each other to make sure it stays secret. Or, you know, like, oh, no, like he's going to be in a commercial where someone's going to kiss. And then we got to stop her and they're going to cut a cake a little bit. And it's going to be like a wedding thing.
I knew the second that was a thing that they were going to she was going to lose her fucking mind.
No, she lost her marbles.
And
for
then
that one.
I did like, I really liked the reaction too, because I'm like, some girl would totally do that.
Yes, yes. That's what I'm saying. And at the end of the day, while the paint job was outlandish and it led to very high comedic, kind of almost slapsticky level of comedy, it was good. And the characters involved, Fudo and Decime, were quite believable in his simple mindedness. I could see people existing that are, I know people that are like Fudo. I know people that are like Decime, where they're just kind of like, professional as fuck at their job, but then they're just like absolute like adult Disney fans or something. Like they're just like some like behind the scenes like cutesy or almost just like,
or like I don't
bullshit.
Know at home they like I don't know watch anime or something
or
weird.
Just watch anime just for fun and probably whatever.
Yeah.
But, who fucking does that? It's such a weird thing to do.
Isn't that a little bit weird? Like being a Disney fan as an adult is pretty weird, but like liking anime is
like absolutely mainstream. Yeah, I think so, because anime is kind of inherently built for all ages, while Disney World is famously built for children.
While I'm not a fan of the direction they're taking the Walt Disney Corporation in, I would love to go. I still really enjoy the park.
Didn't we have a conversation about how, like, absolutely going and get wrecked at a Disney? It would just be fun.
But it would work.
It would be fun. Like, just going to Epcot would be a great time nowadays.
Epcot?
Why not Epcot? Yeah.
There's nothing in fucking Epcot.
The entire world's in Epcot. Have you not been in a while? Like, all the countries that are there.
I guess not.
All the countries are there.
I remember the two things from Epcot. There's this, like, this fake car thing where you're like a car company building a new car that's gonna be able to run over fire and ice and all this random shit.
Is it like the innovation ride where you just kind of like slowly coast through it and
it's
they
like
do
racetrack exploration? This is a long time ago.
Yeah, I think I remember.
And then
a little bit
in
of that.
Scandinavia Land, there's this like Viking ride. That's the only two things I recall.
Scandinavia Land. Well, according to Disney, there's only 14 countries that matter because there's only four. They're like, the entire world is here at Epcot.
And
it's like,
honestly,
Really?
You're right.
Okay. Yeah. So if you had to give it a score, you know, we got to do it to them. How would you rate this?
Yeah, I mean, so I've watched significantly more romance than you.
Sure.
And this definitely is like a tier above the like pure garbage trash that I have put into my brain plenty of times.
Okay.
I like that it didn't have like a... I think this show easily could have leaned hard into like ecchi, like harem building, and it just didn't at all.
They had all the bones, didn't they?
They had the bones.
Yeah, they
it
just
could
didn't.
Have been.
I respect that they didn't.
An uproarious harem.
And
I'm going to give it
a
75.
Ooh, okay.
It's run-of-the-mill, but like not too run-of-the-mill.
Yeah.
It's like mid-C.
Okay. I was going to give it a 72.
Okay.
Because I think it just barely, in my mind, I'm trying, you know, as we go through more and more ratings, we got to like, I'm kind of grouping certain, you know, scores. If you're in the 70s, you're good. You are not breaking into a show that you're going to remember for a long time, but it's not a 60s where you're walking away with core, huge, major issues with the show that just blocks your enjoyment.
70s is good.
There's nothing here that's going to block enjoyment, but there you have to come.
80s great, 90s masterpiece,
90s legendary.
Yeah.
Legendary. So
SS plus.
So this is a 72. It broaches good. There's nothing here that breaks the show's ability to be enjoyed. And I think a couple of the way they use certain longstanding tropes, like the forbidden love and the Sentai paint job, that actually augment what could have just been pretty run-of-the-mill high 60s. So I think that you do have to come in, like we had mentioned, with this huge suspension of disbelief. Like, you just you have to let a lot of stuff go because you're here for the romance. Everything else is just kind of a setup for the comedy and the romance. And you have to be in an open attitude about the application of some of these themes. And while they're not 100% fleshed out, I think it overall package, it makes for a great time. Like, will I remember it by Thursday? Probably not. I think I'll be on to something different. But in the moment that I watched it, I wasn't having a bad time. I'm okay with it. Yeah.
I think you'll remember it. It's hard to, that uniform she wears is hard to forget about.
There's some real
it's just
great.
It's so wild.
There's some great ass shots in that.
Anyway, yeah. I think my next like romance I want to try to get you to watch, though it's a lot longer, is Nisekoi.
Never.
I mentioned it a few times not too long ago, but like you definitely haven't seen it.
Okay.
The only problem is it's like, I want to say it's either full core, like 24 plus 12.
Double core, yeah.
Well,
I think a core is 20. I think a core is 12, right? A single core is 12. Double core is 24.
So maybe it's three core then.
Ooh, we got a triple core on our hands. Oh shit!
Right, but that's long, so I don't know like how that really fits in. But it's definitely, I like if you think this is like a 72, I would imagine the next one, Nisekoi, would be like mid to high 80s.
Yeah, because I think what I'm learning from these romance anime is I'm getting a better sense. I think I've always had it. I think we've both always had it. Kind of a sense of the portrayal of Japanese romantic courtship in a lot of these shows,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Is that this show was a great example of like how handholding was insanely early for a third date, which...
I doubt that's real these days.
And that was my second point, is that is that a portrayal in anime or is that reality that is just, it is a borrowed cultural, like just known thing, like an assumption.
Maybe
right?
We got to get our boy Tristan on the phone and see what it's like over in old Japan land.
He's been out and about out in the old Nippon. I think he'd be able to tell us. And he's done a little dating out there in Japan, so maybe he knows a bit about courtship. I think maybe
let's
not
ask him about that.
Well, maybe we should force him to watch romantic anime and see if, like,
is this how it goes?
And if he's like, this is fucking weird, no. Like, all right, well, there it is. But, or he's like, this is exactly how it is. And
all right,
I haven't held hands in two years.
We'll have you and, well, you and him both watch Horimiya, because I think that's more realistic.
I think so too.
See what happens.
Yeah. That might be for a good episode. So until then, thank y'all for coming to this class. If you want to listen to any of our other episodes, you're already in the platform, guys. Just two clicks over and down. You can listen to any of our nearly 175 hours of content. And anywhere you want to get like, comment, subscribes, other episodes, all those links are in the description of anywhere you're listening to this episode. If you want to give us a monetary love, only if you can, patreon.com/ubology, $1 up, gets you into our Discord with all of our past guests and lovely Patreon folks. I forced them to do a guessing game for this episode. I don't know if you saw in the chat. I was like, hey, we're doing a rando from spring 2022. Guess. And someone got it right, but I told them they was wrong.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I told him to listen to the episode tomorrow and find out if you were right or not.
That's insane.
Yep, there it is. Someone nailed it. Someone did nail it, though. If you want to give us a little bit more and get some extra content, though, $3 and up, get you into the syllabus sidebar, the lo-fi high vibes, sometimes anime, sometimes not, sometimes visual, and sometimes on hiatus show, where we talk about life and
frequently
shit.
Frequently on hiatus.
Frequently on hiatus. I think we're nearly primed to bring that back.
Yeah, we gotta whip one of those off. I got two pretty decent video ideas that, you know, I've talked to you about one of them. And then one of them has been like just sitting in the periphery
just
of my mind for years.
Just kind
of
percolating in the
one of them for sure I'd like to try to figure out a way to do. It's the one we talked about with real estate.
Well, maybe. Yeah,
which
yes.
I think would be really, really cool and funny. So
look, you're already giving the gold away on the mic. Let's give it to the sidebar.
Yeah.
Like that we'll have the full discussion. If you want to hear about the ideas that we have, that is where we discuss them. Future episodes and other auxiliary content that we think about. And also our weird game shows we come up with, like The Price is Wrong, bitch. Where we tell each other, this is auctioned off. This is a real weird thing. Guess the price. You have three guesses. It's a fun one. It's a right. good, it's a good game show. But
like Madonna's toothpick from the 1992.
Or like five strands of Elvis's hair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or like soiled underwear from like the Reagan era or some shit. Okay. We had something like that.
Yeah, it wasn't too far off.
It was too far off. But I think that's honestly it. I'm going to probably transform into my editing mode of, you know, Power Ranger style and go upstairs and edit this shit.
I'm tired.
Yeah. No, I got you. Well, I'll edit this. I'll edit this one. You, man. You rest. I got this.
Thanks,
yeah.
bro.
Yeah, but until we take our long-awaited rest and finally get back into the syllabus sidebar, I guess. I'm Ricky.
And I'm hibernating.
And this is Noemology.
Deuces. This
is about to be a bear of yourself and just go rest. Work is going to be pissed.